Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Beautiful listeners, by any chance, did you listen to part one of Ethel Bell? Because you have to go back and listen to that first. And Cheryl left us in a super cliffhanger. Mary Perro is in studio with Cheryl and I today, and Mary and I are just looking at each other like, don't stop now. There's so much more to Ethel's story. She and her husband went to Africa as missionaries. They were on the West Coast, and during the time when the tensions were building, that French-controlled area, World War II's coming, and they have to get out. They got on a freight ship with
Lashaway.
But how many of the children I lost?
So there was another missionary couple that had three children.
Right.
And then maybe you remember Ethel lost
two twins,
and her husband died, mm-hmm. and yet she went back to Africa to serve the Lord with her kids.
Yes.
She actually started a school in San Mali, West Africa. And so she didn't really want to leave it because it was doing so well. And she didn't want to leave them to the mercy of the Vichy French and to the Germans. And yet she was ordered to evacuate by the Christian Missionary Alliance. And so she does. And I left you with the fact that her ship had been torpedoed.
Yes.
And Mrs. Shaw and their Mrs. Shaw's oldest daughter, they're missing. And so all you've got is their older son, Richard, who's 13, and their young daughter, Carol, who's 7. And you've got Mr. Shaw, and then you've got Ethel, and you've got both her children, Robert, and her daughter, Mary, are alive. And they've been able to find them. Now they've just climbed up onto a raft, all right? But
Sort of a raft.
Yeah, right. It's a cargo raft. So it's a piece of canvas stretched across these barrels, but it's actually probably more buoyant than a life
and
boat
large
would have been.
You said large enough for
8 by 10. But listen to this. They just make their way. Remember I told you it was hard, and they've just climbed up on this when all of a sudden what surfaces out of the water? The German U-boat.
No.
What?
No.
Yes, it surfaces.
How come we've never heard this
50,
story?
50 yards away from them.
And they are on the raft, the large drum, but they're with the captain now because they previously have been on another raft and he said, come on over to me.
So guess what happens now? The Germans begin to spray them with bullets. There's three men. They can even see the beard. And they begin to spray them with bullets.
Oh, my goodness.
So they all have to jump in the water to escape the bullets. And then,
and they are 250 miles out from
South America,
port in South America,
and probably wearing bright orange life vests.
Yes, in the Atlantic Ocean.
Yes,
this is incredible.
Yes, so they wait for the U-boat, and it's quite a time to submerge, and then they climb back up onto the raft. I might have the timing off; it wasn't clear, like whether they sprayed them with bullets while they were before Captain brought them onto this one or after. But Mr. Shaw is put on a different lifeboat with some of the crewmen. And Mr. Shaw has become very unresponsive. After not being able to find his wife and his oldest daughter, he can't pull himself together. He can't even hug or fight for his children. He's just
shutting down.
He's shutting down completely, and he's going into this deep, deep depression. So at first, the sailors link the four crates together, and the boat's captain, as I said, Benjamin Bogdan, was over them, but he's also injured. But he continues to command the seamen. Now, he wants to ensure the survival of what's left of his crew, and he also feels this obligation to protect Ethel Bell and the children. And he knows something that Ethel and others don't know, and he knows that not all of his crew is trustworthy.
Oh, no.
He knows that, and so he insists on taking care of them. Well, some of the crew has been really wise, and they were able to grab the emergency supplies. There was enough time for them to grab the emergency supplies. So each boat has a ration of food and medical supplies. And of the 56 people who were on board the Lashway, like I said, 42 were unevenly distributed on the four flotillas, as I called them. Captain Bogdan had moved Ethel. Each raft had about 30 gallons of fresh water contained in two kegs. This would need to be rationed until help arrived. They also had a sealed tin of emergency rations, including crackers, pemmican. Have you ever heard of pemmican?
No.
Neither had I. I had to look this up because it just took it for granted that I knew what pemmican was and just kept talking about pemmican. So it's a type of beef jerky that is dried meat, berries, sugar, and raisins. Like almost like a dried mincemeat or something, you know?
Interesting.
Isn't that? They also had milk tablets and chocolate. There were also flares to light to signal to a plane, as well as oars to paddle. None of the survivors were able to eat for time because of all the oil and salt water they had ingested. Mm. So the first 3 days were spent retching over the side the crates or the flotillas. I'll call them flotillas. None of the survivors had a compass or a watch, so they had to watch the sun and try to gauge the time of day and direction of their rafts by the sky. Ethel kept mental notes of the days that were passing. She insisted on keeping her children's spirits, and remember, she's also got little Carol and Richard, too, by singing hymns, reminding them of Bible stories, playing games, and quoting scriptures. So every day, she's just keeping this up. Now, the Latin members of the crew were inspired by Ethel's godliness and joined her every time she prayed. And after she prayed or she shared a scripture, they would always do the sign of the cross. And they just loved her, and they felt like their survival depended on God. But there was a bosun. The bosun would have been the captain's right-hand person. And he took a dislike to Ethel. And from the beginning, felt like Ethel and the kids were a detriment, were a, you know, that they could do fare better and there'd be more food if they could just get rid of a liability of the children and of Ethel. And he resented every word she said about God. But the captain protected her. After a week, it was decided that the four rafts could not survive together. So they were untethered, and that was the last that Carol and Richard ever saw of their father.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
A few days into their plight, well, actually, a few days into their plight, after the boats have not been saved, it's been a week, there's been no airplanes, no sightings of a U.S. ship or other allied ship, the captain tells them that they need to put as much palm oil as they can and regular oil all over their bodies because it will keep them from being blistered by the sun.
Yeah.
So they begin to spread this palm oil as much as they can. The seamen also made a makeshift canvas to provide shade and a little privacy for Ethel when she needed it. Now, remember that they have to, there's no bathroom. There's no, everything is, you know,
well,
not private.
You said their clothing had just been shredded in
shredded.
The blast.
Shredded.
And they're up against the elements in the ocean. Now, why do you think they thought it was better to unlash the flotillas?
I don't know.
That's interesting.
I don't know. I think maybe they were afraid that they were a sitting target.
Oh,
for a U-boat or for, right. You know, think about it. If you saw four with all these orange vests on it.
Sure.
And it was a German airplane or it was another U-boat.
I also wonder if it's possible because so many of the crewmen were maybe untrustworthy that there were some possible mutiny ideas about people having different ideas.
It could be.
Women and the children.
It could be.
We need to, we don't want them with us.
Mm. Right. After the second week, Captain Bogdan did not survive.
Oh.
He passed quietly and was placed reverently in the water by his remaining crew. There was no way you could keep a dead body on the raft. But unfortunately, they were surrounded by sharks. There were sharks that were constantly patrolling around them. And when they eased his body into the water, it was immediately devoured by sharks. Oh. So Ethel tried to keep Richard and Robert from looking, but they couldn't resist.
How terrifying. I mean, they need to use the restroom off the side of the boat and things like this. So you're just...
They're at least 3 feet above the water's edge, at least 3 feet. So... But anyway, every person on board constantly wore their life jacket. There was never a time that they took it off. But the space was small and tight, and everybody touched another body. So it was impossible to get comfortable. Nevertheless, their ordeal left them so exhausted that they slept. For 3 weeks, they remained in the raft.
3 weeks.
Adrift at sea. At one time, one of the seamen who tried to seize command of the little rig, this is the bosun, tried to have Ethel and the children put off the raft. Can you imagine? So they have this, they're trailing this, they called it a donut. So that it's like a, inner tube, right? And so they've got that. And sometimes some of the seamen would take a turn being out there. Well, he tried to make Ethel and all the kids sit on there where they would be sitting ducks for the sharks. I mean, this man is cruel. Later, it was discovered that he'd been secretly eating from the rations. The other seamen saved Ethel more than once from his aggression. He badgered Ethel daily with questions about God and the problem of pain, would interrupt her lessons or her songs just to scream at her. But Ethel was able to answer him wisely and kindly each time. She never lost her patience, and she was never, ever discouraged. Though the seaman lost his cool, Ethel always remained full of faith and would talk about, and when the Lord saves us, and when the Lord saves us. The rations were drastically cut back, and they ran out of fresh water. Ethel prayed, and suddenly the sky grew dark with clouds. For 2 hours, and there had not been a cloud in the sky before this, for 2 hours, rain poured down upon the helpless survivors, and they were able to refill their kegs with fresh water.
Wow.
Is that a God thing?
That's a lot of water.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Ethel's faith seemed to deepen during the ordeal. Over and over again, without a Bible, scriptures and Bible stories poured out of to her children in her imagination. She made them alive. She was reminded at one point of Hagar, who discovered that God was aware of her and her plight, calling him the God who sees.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And Ethel often shared what God showed her with the whole raft. I mean, they couldn't help but hear. On Sunday mornings, Ethel insisted on holding services and sharing a message. Afterwards, she would lead the survivors in a few hymns in a time of prayer. There seemed to be only that one man who was bothered by it. The rest came to depend on her, her spirit and faith to pull him through each day. They did not see any airplanes overhead, but often spotted German U-boats.
Wow.
They could see the little turrets. By September 7th, they had lost two members of their group, including the captain. By the third week, the survivor's skin began to blister. Everyone had sores on their bodies. Also, they began to see planes streaking through the sky overhead. Only 17 survivors remained on the small raft of what had once been the crew and passengers of the Lashaway. The bosun was especially hostile to Ethel and inflicted cruelty toward Robert, aggravating the boy's injuries. He'd, pass by him on some pretense and just push him exactly where the sores or the blisters were. After the captain's death, he seized control, and the third Sunday at sea, he refused to let Ethel hold Sunday services. Ethel then quietly ministered to her children. At dusk, though, a plane swooped overhead and tipped its wings to let them know they were spotted. Then the plane swooped over them again. A third time, the plane swooped, and this time it dropped rations to the survivors just out of reach. They watched this crate hit the water, break into pieces, And all these ham sandwiches get immediately devoured by the sharks.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh.
Can you imagine? But a second package and a third package were retrievable, and everyone feasted on ham sandwiches. The package also contained more pemmican and malt tablets, Spam, and 4 cans of condensed milk. The third package contained something else, a woman's dress. The Bussan, in a rare act of kindness, his only one, tossed the dress to Ethel, and Ethel slipped the dress over the rags of what remained of what she had worn since the wreck. On September 14th, a Monday morning, a United States destroyer appeared, and the survivors cheered, but the ship disappeared into the horizon without taking notice of them. The next day, the waves swelled to 30 and 40 feet, but the survivors barely made it through.
Wow.
No one was lost off the barge, but they had to hold on for dear life.
Wow.
The Bussan once again rationed the remaining food. At first, he refused to give any to Ethel and the children until the rest of the crew threatened him with his life if he didn't. Finally, after 20 days at sea, the rations were expended. Suddenly, a convoy of ships appeared on the horizon. They were Dutch ships heading to the U.S. for repairs. Spotting the small craft of survivors, the Dutch crew was afraid they were the survivors of a German U-boat.
No.
So they opened fire.
No.
Oh, no.
Ethel grabbed her children and laid down in the well of the boat. Remember that four-foot... Yes. Deep ridge in the middle. The destroyer, which was called the Vimy, drew close, almost running, after they stopped shooting, almost running the little makeshift raft over. From the deck, they demanded the survivors identify themselves. They called out, "We're Americans who were torpedoed by a U-boat." Rope ladders suddenly appeared from the sides of the destroyer, and the Dutch sailors scuttled down the ropes and tried to gather the survivors up and help them climb the ladders. These people have not walked for over 3 weeks.
Yes. Oh,
they haven't used their legs.
Yes.
They've run out of rations. They have no strength. They cannot climb up the ladders, even with the sailors' help. So, do you know what those sailors did? They threw a fishing net over the side, and they would have three survivors get into the net at once, and they would pull them up over the side of the ship. Can you imagine how painful that was to be pulled up, having not used a limb or anything, and then to be hitting the sides of the ship and then brought
with
overboard
their sores and
with their sores and everything else? But they were able to get all the passengers on board. Ethel and the children were ushered to the captain's quarters and then seen by the doctor on board. 2 days later, they landed on Barbados, and Mary celebrated her 14th birthday at a hospital where they treated her to cream puffs. Now, Ethel, while they were on the boat, would say, "Let's pretend that this pemmican is our favorite food." And so Mary had said, "It's cream puffs. I'm pretending it's cream puffs." And when the hospital in Barbados found out that her food of longing was cream puffs, they made sure that she had cream puffs. Actually, though, the crew on the boat had been so kind. They had clothes, women's clothes, on this destroyer because they had attended a masquerade ball. And somehow some of the men had dressed up like women, and they had those outfits, and they gave it to Ethel and to the girls. So they're in these incredible outfits.
Princess,
you know,
eating cream puffs.
Ball gowns.
After 3 weeks.
They're eating biscuits and strawberry jam on board the ship. But that was something special they brought to the girls, because they didn't have cream puffs. But they brought them biscuits and strawberry jam, which the girls just found, you know, exquisite. Also, the ship's captain had purchased some lingerie for his wife, but he gave it to Ethel because he recognized that her need was greater. The boys were kept a week at the hospital. because they were unable to walk. They were so weak. And everyone had lost about 40 to 50 pounds.
Oh, my.
That was an average. And so these boys especially were just bone thin. However, the hospital staff was amazed at how healthy and minimally affected these survivors were by their ordeal. And their burns were minimal compared to what they had been through. On September 23rd, the remains of the Lashaway drifted ashore on the southeast beaches of St. Vincent. So this is in the Caribbean, right? And one survivor remained on board, barely clinging to life. So he had just stayed in what was left of the ship. And there had been other crew members who had been on board with him, but they all perished.
Oh, my.
When the other survivors began to recover, they sought out Ethel at the hospital. One man testified, "Mrs. Bell, one night when I was scared, I looked up, and I believe I saw a light over the raft. The light was your faith, and it saved us all."
Oh, that's beautiful.
Beautiful. Yes.
Another, his name was Woodman Potter, shared that as a result of Ethel's prayers and the way she shared on this little raft, he returned to his early childhood faith in God. Another, Joe Greenwell, said, "She's a great lady. God bless her." On October 23rd, 1942, Ethel and her children arrived at LaGuardia Airport in New York City. Ethel and her children were then taken to NIAC. And from there, Ethel was summoned to Washington, D.C., where she was debriefed by various government agencies. They wanted to know all about that U-boat and where she had seen the U-boats. On October 30th, 1942, Ethel and her children were reunited in Toronto, Canada, with her parents, who were 75 years old. Ethel immediately was in high demand as a speaker at various churches and luncheons all over Canada and eastern United States. She wrote an article for Good Housekeeping magazine.
Really?
And while she traveled, Mary and Robert stayed with their grandparents and enjoyed some of their cousins, some time with their cousins. Ethel enrolled her children in school and waited out the war. After the hostilities ceased, Robert was enrolled at Stony Brook Boarding School. That's important to me because that's where my grandson went. And Mary was enrolled in college. Ethel returned to Africa to serve until her retirement in 1962.
Wow.
Altogether, she served 40 years in Africa.
That's incredible.
Yes.
After she retired in 1962, she moved to Nebraska and lived to be
over 100, I'm sure.
Close. 90 years old.
90. Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm.
Goodness.
Dying July 20th, 1983. Her life verse was Psalm 91:16, and you're not going to believe how appropriate this verse is. "With long life will I satisfy him and show him my salvation." Ethel's life was proof that God keeps his promises.
Amen.
What a wonderful story.
Isn't that amazing?
Another woman we can't wait to meet in heaven.
You know, it reminds me of just like almost the calling of a school teacher, like her heart to share. That was her real life's work.
Mm.
And, you know, when push comes to shove and we're under duress and she's on this, she still can't help but be who she was gifted and called to be. And the Lord just gave her the strength to, God bless the school teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Saved us all.
Yes.
Interestingly enough, Robert later in life got in touch with the very men who torpedoed the ship.
Really?
And had a reunion with them in Germany.
Oh.
And he publicly forgave them.
Wow.
For all that he had gone through. Yeah. And then they had a reunion with the crew in the 1970s, after Ethel had retired and come back to the States on the East Coast. They all got together, all the survivors of the Lashaway.
Oh, amazing.
And talked about, again, Ethel was so honored at that because they said, "It was your faith. It was your faith that kept us up. You know, we didn't have any hope of planes, but you kept saying, no, God sees and God will never leave us in this place." And that would make the bosun so like mad, like, no, you'll get used to the fact that you're going to die and, you know, you won't survive and quit
Was he filling everyone with,
you know, false hope? Actually, he was.
Oh, really? Oh, that's
interesting. And he had changed greatly. And again, everyone commented on how Ethel's faith was what brought them through. Even though he didn't want to believe it, it was her faith that sustained, inspired, you know, not just her own faith for herself and her children, but her faith for the whole of all the survivors.
God bless Ethel Bell.
Ooh, amazing.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.